This is an ABC podcast.
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Hello and welcome to ABC Radio National's The Pop Test, a quiz about science. I'm Andy Matthews, the left ear of the head that is your hosting team.
And I am the horrified 19th century woman receiving that ear as a gift from a lunatic painter and having to fake enthusiasm because I already got one from Van Gogh earlier in the day, Alistair Tremblay-Burchell. And this episode is about plastic. Andy, what is plastic?
Plastics, Alistair, are materials that over the space of the last 100 years have come to totally dominate our world. Indeed, if instead of a moldable solid, plastic was, say, a work of classic literature, critics would no doubt be applauding its ability to reach remote places and lodge itself in the brains of children, a dichotomy that reveals a lot about society's double standards.
Indeed, but the best things about plastic, its durability and usefulness, are also the worst things about it, making plastic the perfect material for manufacturing double-edged swords.
As we have grown more aware of the risks of plastic waste, so too have grown our efforts to preserve the natural environment.
Unfortunately for us, the usual approach that we have to preserving things involves covering them in a layer of plastic.
So far, though, that seems to somehow be making things worse.
And speaking of the earse at the end of worse, it's time to introduce our earse guest, comedian and broadcast omni-talent, Claire Hooper. Claire, can you tell us about a time that you used plastic? Yes or no?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Perfect answer.
Well
That'll
done.
Be a useful skill one day, I think.
Mm. And our second guest is science journalist Jacinta Bowler. Jacinta, is there a point at which it's just easier to remove the sea creatures from the ocean and put them somewhere else?
That's a great idea. I think we should definitely work on that. Where can we put it? Maybe somewhere. We know there's lots of water on Mars and the moon. Maybe we could just freeze them into the ice.
See, that's the kind of thinking that is really going to solve this for us.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe the third drawer from the top where you would normally keep your plastic bags.
Mm. I don't think I want fish in that drawer.
No,
you know?
Sure. I mean, that's a choice of you if you don't care about the environment. And our final guest is comedian Kirsty Wiebeck. Kirsty, is there anything plastic can't do?
Nah.
That's amazing. Yeah.
This is going to be such an efficient podcast.
Oh, we are getting through it.
Also, can I just table my early objection that after introducing your first guest, you didn't say Kirsty?
Oh.
Like, why wouldn't you do Kirsty Firsty?
And remember, like a coalition of beverage manufacturers working together to stop Australia getting a national container deposit scheme, you are all on the same team. Team Science, as we combat the forces of ignorance. Plastic famously can't break down, so there's no chance of it bursting into tears at the end of our This Is Your Life-inspired retrospective of its perfectly preserved family tree in this, the History Round.
The magic of plastics comes from their atomic structure. They are long chains of organic molecules based around the carbon atom. In the 1800s, chemists who were used to studying molecules made up of a handful of atoms like water or carbon dioxide started to find organic molecules that were made of thousands and thousands of atoms. By the end of that century, they started to learn how to make these molecules themselves. So, Claire, why has plastic been so good for sea turtles?
Well, it's kept their sandwiches fresh.
Mm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're not picking up the juices of the, like, whatever fruit's cut up next to them in the lunchbox.
That's true, yeah. Absolutely.
And I suppose it's not just bits of the sandwich are not falling around all throughout their backpacks and sort of just getting in between the pages of their school books.
Of their sea turtle textbooks.
Yeah. Well, while that was a very good answer, the answer that we have is when it was invented, advertisements praised plastic as the savior of the elephant and the tortoise.
What?
Because it was invented to replace the use of endangered tortoise shells and ivory in commercial products. A reward for whoever could invent a substance to replace ivory billiard balls led John Wesley Hyatt in 1869 to create the first commercial plastic, celluloid. Made from cotton fiber and camphor, it was not totally synthetic. Celluloid was volatile and sometimes led to billiard balls exploding, which, if you ask me, is what's missing from modern billiards. And that's why it's called pool, because that's what you have to jump into after the balls explode.
There you go. But exploding billiard balls wasn't enough. Soon, celluloid was used to make exploding buttons, exploding combs, and exploding cinema film. And people started to wonder, would this be even more useful if it didn't explode? This led US inventor and Belgian immigrant Leo Baekeland to use a tar byproduct called phenol, formaldehyde, and asbestos to make a product that one patent clerk said was completely useless. But it turned out to be completely useful. Leo called his fully synthetic plastic Bakelite, and at the end of the 1920s, Baekeland declared he couldn't name 43 industry branches that did not use it. And the Baekeland family became enormously rich. But how, Kirsty, did his adult grandson die? And I'll give you a clue, it's what they would call ironic.
Yeah, this is actually a bit soon for me to be talking about this.
Did you run over him with a bus?
A plastic
still,
bus.
It's still very raw for me. He unfortunately got hit in the head with a pool ball.
Did it explode? Sure.
Exploded.
Yeah.
Awful, well,
his,
horrible
his
scene.
His head or the ball?
Both. Combination.
Couldn't name 43 industry branches. 43 is a lot of branches. Why would you not just say you couldn't name two branches?
Yeah. Look, I reckon it means that he could name 42 industry branches. Yeah,
yeah. Agriculture, war, kite making. That's got quite a fair bit of plastic in it, actually. All right. Utensils. Oh, no, wait. Okay. Jesus, it's hard.
Your Belgian accent is flawless.
That's right.
I'm afraid the correct answer was that his adult grandson suffocated on a plastic bag in 1980.
Oh, no.
Although it would have been a polyethylene bag, so it would have been a real slap in the face. That's a types of plastics joke about a dead man.
No, it was funny, but it's hard to laugh.
Absolutely right.
Scientists and inventors looked around for other organic molecules they could force into giant chains and make into plastics. But by putting the gas ethylene under enormous pressure and heat, Reginald Gibson and Eric Fawcett were able to create a series of extremely dangerous explosions. But then an equipment malfunction created polyethylene. Successful commercialization of this new plastic almost collapsed when manufacturers adopted a process that created a weak, fragile product that nobody wanted to buy. But Jacinta, they were saved when they used all the useless polyethylene to make what?
It was hula hoops. But okay, what is going on there? Like, the guy who invented that, you're like, okay, I'm going to take this plastic that's not very good and just make it into hula hoops. Like, how good is that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So it would have been during the hula hoop craze of the 1950s, the companies gave them breathing space to fix their processes while using up the glut of dodgy polyethylene.
So apparently it first started in Australia with a bamboo hoop, and then some American executive came over here, or like some executive's wife was like, look at this bamboo hoop that all the kids in Australia are playing with, took it back and then made plastic ones.
Do you know what? It's actually not. You don't want a hula hoop to be too light. As in, they're fun to like roll down the hill when they're light, but if you're actually trying to you actually need to teen a bit of weight in them, yeah, or some sand inside
this
the polyethylene.
Spoken like somebody who has hooled some hoops.
I've done heaps of hoopies.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's in my name.
Yeah. That's why she's called Claire Hooper. Yeah. That's not even her real name.
That's a nickname.
I was born Claire Tremblay Birchall. Ah.
You have to earn Tremblay Birchall.
To be honest, I only had Tremblay. I was working towards the Birchall.
I only changed my name to this after I'd done a bunch of Tremblay Birchling.
Throughout the 1900s, scientists began to understand the molecules that make plastic. Most include two carbon atoms that bond to each other like two dancers holding hands. They can be made to let go of one hand and join hands with another molecule to make long, repeating chains that tangle together like the tails of a rat king to form a strong but flexible material. World War II caused a boom in the types and uses of plastics, but Claire, which plastic product reportedly caused 40,000 women to riot in 1945?
It was a plastic blow-up doll of Gary Cooper. I couldn't get enough of it.
Well, before that, they'd all been made out of leather and stuff, and it just hadn't had the same.
Oh, that's right. You're always catching your rings on the stitching. But they, you can get them real slippery now he was plastic.
I like that they're sold at the pharmacy, like they're a medical product.
That's right. Well, yes. That was that
hysteria
problem.
Sure.
The medicine for hysteria was a blow up Gary Cooper doll, but to get it, you had to act real hysterical, hence the riot.
Yeah.
Sure. That works. Yeah.
Okay, I'll see if you're correct. I'm afraid the answer was nylon stockings. Invented by Wallace Carruthers in 1935, nylon was rapidly commercialised to make an alternative to expensive silk stockings. When manufacturing was diverted to the war effort, nylons disappeared, and their popularity when they reappeared after the war led to what were called the nylon riots.
Since 1950, production of plastic has increased from around 2 million tons a year to around 500 million tons. Meanwhile, scientists have worked hard to make ones that are stronger and longer lasting. Unfortunately, an unforeseen consequence of stronger and longer lasting plastics is that they are stronger and often last longer. Combined with their cheapness and disposability, this has meant we've created the perfect pollutant. But Kirsty, where is the most heavily littered place on Earth?
It's an 18 to 35-year-old male's share house bedroom.
That is incredibly accurate.
Just covered in stuff, like just debris everywhere, like so much litter that probably will never break down.
There's an undergrowth.
An undergrowth.
I'll see you that, and I'll raise you the floor of his Holden Astra. Have you been into those cars where actually you can't, there's nowhere to put your feet down? Like you can't touch that surface there.
Yeah, you got to have your knees in your face.
While you are more correct, we have to go with this awful sheet answer here, which says Henderson Island, an uninhabited island in the South Pacific. Despite being one of the most remote places on Earth and one of the only raised coral atolls in the world whose ecosystems remain unaffected by human contact, the approximately 12 million tons of plastic waste that enter the Earth's oceans each year, combined with Pacific Ocean currents, have led to its beaches having 670 pieces of rubbish per square meter.
In 2016, bacteria was discovered in a sludge outside a bottling recycling factory in Osaka, which had the ability to decompose plastic. Scientists have since created a more effective mutant version of this bacteria in the hope of using it to break down plastic on an industrial scale. But Jacinta, what is one downside of having bacteria that eats plastic?
Maybe it's like a superhero, right? Maybe a normal guy falls into like a vat of toxic sludge and then comes out a superhero. Now, the fact that you've now got a superhero or a bacteria that eats plastic is good, but not super good that you put the guy in the sludge in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. So there's an ethical dilemma here.
It's creating sort of an incentive, you know, for people to put other people into sludges. It's the culture that it creates of leaving sludge around.
Instead of just getting rid of the sludge and not having crime.
Sure.
Mm. Is it that it's hard to find a Tupperware to keep it in?
It is very close to being the actual correct answer.
You'd find the Tupperware. It'd be the lid that you couldn't find.
Yeah. Oh, mate. I am going through this right now. We are all lids at the moment. We're going through a very heavy lid cycle at my house. I'm afraid the correct answer is that because they could damage the plastic that we rely on so much. The fact that these bacteria have evolved to consume plastic means the plastics we rely on so heavily may not be as durable as we thought. So we want, you know, it is like your superhero thing. You know, you want someone to solve the problem, but then that's going to create a whole set of new problems.
But Claire got it. That was the answer, right? Yeah. Do we get those points? Because absolutely. You can't find Tupperware to put it in because they'll eat the Tupperware.
I'm going
to
give you the points.
Yes. Team Science!
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And at the end of that round, Team Science is on 8 points, which means it's still neck and neck.
Yay!
That's right. Your neck is exactly at the same position as your neck.
As your neck, yes.
The pop test.
And now on to round two. We don't pretend to have all the answers, but we're happy to pretend that our guests do by asking them to give us their best guess, and then we will correct them because we have all the answers. This round is called How Do Whales Work? So, Claire, If I were to give you some bananas, how would you approach the challenge of turning them into a plastic bag?
Look, I'm going to have to go philosophical with this and just propose that in some ways a banana is the same as a plastic bag because you always forgot to bring one. Do you know what I mean? Like they are exactly, they look the same because they are both an absence of a thing. You know what I mean? Like you're always like, oh, I forgot to bring my banana. And equally, I forgot my plastic bag. And thus they are already the same thing.
Can I try?
I don't think I need you.
Claire just told you the full details.
That's true. My bad.
But I'll tell you what. We'll throw you a bun. Come on. Okay. Show us what
we'll
you
help
got.
You out.
So banana. So one of the things that bananas have, the reason why you put them next to other fruit to make them ripen faster is because they've got ethylene in them and a lot of ethylene, so it releases from the bananas. So assumedly polyethylene is made out of, that's not assumedly, that's true. Polyethylene is made out of ethylene, the same thing that comes out of bananas. My issue is to get the bananas ethylene, you would need to put it in a plastic bag. To then be able, or do like some kind of plastic container to then be able to get the ethylene to then be able to make the plastic bag. So I don't think it would be a super effective system.
It's still a pretty philosophical answer, isn't it? Mm.
You are absolutely correct. Yes, plastic bags are mostly made of the world's most widely used plastic, polyethylene, a polymer made from ethylene. While it is most often obtained from fossil fuels, ethylene is also released as a gas by ripening bananas. Now, if you had enough, you could capture this gas and use high pressure and heat or a catalyst to make these small ethylene molecules join up into polymer chains and form a solid, which, after being melted and inflated into a tube, hundreds of meters long using the blown film extrusion process can be cut and heat sealed into bags. Bags that you can keep your bananas in.
We've gone full circle. Mm.
And now, Jacinta, a question for you.
Oh, if that's okay.
Don't worry, I'll answer this one.
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, is a microplastic and how does it get to the top of Mount Everest?
So what do you think?
No, I'll let you have it.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Okay, so microplastics, very bad. I'm sure everyone already knows what a microplastic is. It's like a really small plastic that comes from bigger plastics. It comes off usually with radiation, so things like the sun getting on the plastic can really damage it. So you get these little microplastics. I think they're smaller than, they're a couple of millimeters, they're like, or smaller. Now, Mount Everest, like I know that microplastics can fly, so maybe they're like, coming from one place, like one mountaintop to another?
I would say correct. Microplastics are bits of plastic smaller than 5 millimeters long. They are created when sunlight, wind, or wave actions cause larger plastics to break down and spread through the oceans, food chain, and even the atmosphere. They've been found in isolated lakes in Mongolia, the bottom of the Mariana Trench, and at 8,400 meters high on Mount Everest via hiker's clothing.
And Kirsty, why do you reckon plastic takes so long to break down?
Is this a joke? It's hard as.
Mm.
It's super hard. It's hard, mate.
What about soft ones?
Yeah, the soft ones are harder than other soft things as well. And I don't reckon I know it takes plastic a long time to break down is all the molecules and atoms. Plastic is rich in molecules and atoms.
You're absolutely right. It's positively packed with the stuff. Yeah.
Just like a rock is also full of atoms.
So you're saying it's the molecules and atoms that are somehow stopping it from breaking.
Yeah, they're too strong.
Yeah.
Too strong.
Yeah.
Good answer.
I think with those last three words, she might have got it.
I think she's getting some of the points, yes. One of the reasons that plastic takes so long to break down in nature is because it's a new compound. So it isn't something that organisms have evolved to be able to eat. It's relatively new in the environment. But also, it's because that's what we designed them to do. We spent a long time refining their structural and chemical... Chemicals are made up of molecules and atoms.
Yes.
Chemical robustness, so your curry doesn't melt through the container or your mouth doesn't dissolve your toothbrush. Some newer plastics have specific antimicrobial properties, and these have the potential to preserve plastic to make it more desirable for reuse and recycling.
At the end of that round, Team Science is on 30 points.
Yeah!
Which means you can still win.
Wow.
That's very good.
It's the most points anyone's ever had at the end of round
two. We're doing
it.
We did it.
And this is the Pop Test on ABC Radio National.
And if you want more science comedy quiz, you can hear a whole bunch more on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Finally, it's time for a speed round to take us to the end of the show. But because it's taking us in a particular direction, we call it a velocity round. Question one. What is the worst alternative to a plastic bag? Kirsty.
A puppy. Like, mm-hmm. you use a plastic bag to carry stuff around in, and, like, if you put your shopping into a puppy, you'd make it very sick.
Claire?
I have so many options for an answer. A banana.
Mm.
No, hang on. Two plastic bags.
Ah, double bagging. Yes, or, by that same token, two puppies.
Or two puppies. Any number of puppies is a terrible alternative.
Yes, you're
but
right.
So plastic bags. I don't know the answer to this. Is it the hard plastic bags because they're just more plastic and no one reuses them and they say they're reusable, but they're actually, no one reuses them.
Now, is this a velocity round?
We're going to tear the world down.
The correct answer is maybe an organic cotton tote bag, which it's been calculated would have to be reused 20,000 times to have the same cumulative environmental impact as making a plastic bag.
What's so great about biodegradable plastics?
Claire.
You don't have to unwrap the food first. Just let your tummy do the work.
Just swallow it whole like a duck. Like that, and then just let it unfurl in your gut.
Yeah, taste it with your tum-tum.
They're not very, so we don't have a lot of regulation in Australia, but biodegradable, it breaks down, but it's not actually, I did a whole article on this, so it's like all in my head. It doesn't actually break down properly because we don't have a lot of systems in place to be able to make sure that you do, the plastic that you do get, if it's got biodegradable in the label, it's probably not actually biodegradable. Also, my local fruit and veg shop, this is my least favorite thing, they have a bag, a plastic bag that just says degradable. All plastic is degradable. That's the whole point. I hate it.
Correct. There's not much great about it. The lack of standards around what defines a biodegradable plastic means the term often just applies to plastic that fragments, or degrades, from environmental wear, releasing microplastics. From 2022, these types of biodegradable plastics will be illegal in Australia.
Question three, what's so great about compostable plastics? Kirsty.
You can compost them.
I am afraid not. No, I mean, you probably can't. Yeah, there's not much great about compostable plastics. There are standards for compostable plastics, so you can check for certification. However, most compostable plastics are only designed to break down in industrial composting facilities. Otherwise, they can take just as long to break down as regular plastic.
Correct.
How long should it take for a Lego head to pass through your digestive system?
3 months, ordinarily. But like if you drink heaps of olive oil, like 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah. Is that what the movie Lorenzo's Oil is about?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Studies suggest on average 1.71 days. But if you swallow it and there's already a Lego body in there, it should just run back up out of your mouth.
And Kirsty, if it is taking 3 months, please see your doctor.
Maybe a nice walk to the top of Everest will loosen you up a little.
Get things moving.
To capitalise on the abundance of plastic and the lightness of plastic, in 1941, Henry Ford made a car with a body made of plastic. This car was named the what car? Claire.
The heavily discounted car.
The correct answer is the soybean car, after the soy fibre that was added to the plastic to strengthen it.
Yeah, I stand by my original answer.
Well, you didn't fall for our trap, so I'll give you a point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, I'm so sorry to see your trap and nimbly avert it.
It was very agile of you, and we didn't expect for your mind to be so nimble. Which brings us to the end of the show, and Team Science, you are on 36 points, which means you win!
Yay!
Congratulations!
Thank you to our guests, science journalist Jacinta Bowler and comedians Kirsty Wiebeck and Claire Hooper.
Thank you for listening, and until next time, a personal question. Is tinnitus good? Because I've been hearing a lot of buzz.
Goodbye.
See ya.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.